Everybody skips the song Sentimental Man on the Wicked Cast recording. You know it. We know it. We're willing to wager that even Stephen Schwartz knows it. But keep your thumb away from the skip button on the new podcast, Sentimental Men.
Join self-proclaimed Wicked aficionados Quincy Brown and Kevin Bianchi as they examine the musical Wicked from Elphaba's emerald-tinted point of view, joined by a different actress who has performed the role in each episode. Keep up with them on social media at SentMenPod and stream their episodes wherever you get your podcasts. All right, now back to the show.
Okay, Connor lied. We aren't back to the show yet. This is Dylan flying solo, I know, jarring, to tell you all about our exclusive bonus content platform, Patreama. Drama plus Patreon is fun mini episodes, long-form twin talk convos, videos from our Zoom recordings, and even access to our Instagram close friends. Skip your PSL this month and subscribe to Patreama for only $5. You'll also get the scoop on our upcoming guests and maybe even some merch giveaways. All right, now back to the show for real.
Press play, curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City. I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell, and here we are. Life is crazy, and it's funny, Connor, you said right before we hit record, you're like, does it rain every day we record?
It's literally every time, every single time. And it can really make or break a mood, you know?
Yes. Although I'm honestly, the lighting is right for me right now.
I know.
And I'm just feeling my oats, my oatmeal, everything. And it's going to be a fun episode.
You're glowing.
This guest that we have today.
I know.
We've wanted. But we never had the courage to ask because we always thought, she's busy.
She's busy. I know.
And a big deal.
But I know, and our guest, it's very relevant because our guest was nominated for a Tony.
And they were.
And actually, I'm realizing, have we talked about the Tonys on the pod yet?
Well, our Patreon listeners and subscribers will have listened to our episode, which for anyone who's interested, it's an hour of Connor and I arguing, but not about what you think.
Yeah.
And it's $5 a month for anyone who just, when drama every Wednesday isn't enough, you know, there's the Friday.
The Friday.
Drops as well.
Yeah, so we talk about reality TV. We talk about whatever it was we done. The Tony, we did a whole Tony Noms episode.
We talked about the Tonys, which was a lot of me talking about Aaron Tveit.
Yes, which is normal.
Oh, yes.
And me,
but I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do my best today to not talk about him.
I know. Yeah. We'll edit this out. I'm just kidding. We're not going to edit it out. But should we jump in?
I think we should, because one of the big topics of that Patreon Tony nominations episode was the 15-time nominated Jagged Little Pill.
That's right. And also, you were talking about your glowing lighting earlier, and our guest, you know, this is of course an audio format, but our guest is glowing. Truly
glowing.
like an angel sent from heaven above.
I feel like I'm watching a perfume commercial or something.
Wait, do you remember Britney Spears's perfume commercials? were they called Fantasy? And she would be like, there once was a girl, and she's like wandering through the woods, and there's like she's giving me that. Anyway,
I thought that she was in a hotel.
You know what? There's a lot of perfume commercials for Britney Spears. Listeners, DM us and tell us your favorite. Tell us how we got it wrong. Or right. Anyway.
Let's bring in our guest, because we cannot waste a second of her time with our blabbering.
I know. Oh, my God. Okay. So our guest today is a 2020 Tony Award and Drama Desk nominee and Outer Critics Circle honoree for Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role in a Musical for her work as Mary Jane Healy in Jagged Little Pill. Before her acclaimed turn in the Alanis Morissette musical, audiences have been delighted by her powerhouse acting and stunning vocals in On the Town as Claire, the 2008 revival of Company as April, Crybaby, Million Dollar Quartet, and the national tours of The Bridges of Madison County and Xanadu. Off-Broadway, she played Gussie in James Lapine's production of Merrily We Roll Along at City Center Encores, and the nurse in Hello Again, TV, Black Box, Think Tank, Made in Jersey, Fringe, The Chappelle Show, and PBS's great performances, Company. You surely will recall her marvelous rendition of The Miller Son from A Little Night Music during Sondheim's 90th birthday celebration. She is an artist off stage and screen as well, as she creates handmade and tie-dyed totes, onesies, shirts, and more via her page at EL_stands_by_hands. Please welcome to Drama, Elizabeth Stanley.
Drama. I love that you guys sang your intro.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I need to do the same. Hello.
I love that we have that sound bite now.
I love when the guest says drama. Actually, our first ever episode, we had Krista Rodriguez on, and it was like our first one, and we were so nervous. We were like, oh my God, are the people we talk to going to be into this podcast? And the first thing she says, you know, when she's on the hot mic, is she goes, drama. And I cannot tell you how many the chills that went down my back. Oh my God, they've never gone down.
History is repeating itself today when you said it as well, Elizabeth. So,
oh my God, well, I'm in good company. I love me some Krista Rod. She's the best.
Oh yes, she is so amazing. We love you, and we have been fans of you for so long. We first of all, congratulations on all of the accolades that have come your way for Jagged Little Pill.
Thank you. This is already such an ego boost. Just hearing the intro, I was like, oh, I should really feel good about myself.
You should. Oh my God. You've done so many great things.
Thank you. I feel like, you know, I've been really lucky to have a lot of really wonderful opportunities to do shows that have ended up being so special to me.
That's awesome.
Jagged is so special. I think it's the first time we've seen you live, but we've been fans for years. And I remember the biggest regret was that we missed Bridges on Broadway. And then when we heard it was touring, we were like, well, we're not going to miss it. And then we missed it. I just don't know where we were. It was like a shorter tour, and it was like a limited dates, maybe West Coast more so.
Yeah, it never really came east. So, you know, unless you're like really die hard and you're gonna like get on a plane, like, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's okay.
Well, thank you.
I truly can't imagine how beautiful you would have sounded singing that score, because it is seriously one of my favorite Broadway scores of the last 10 years, for real.
Same. I mean, I've always been a Jason Robert Brown fan, but that just like took it to a whole new epic level. Just like, wait, what? Also this?
Yeah,
I know.
And what a great role.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. I mean, same. Like, Marcia Norman's script is so beautiful, and the character that she wrote in Francesca is just like, there's so much there. I was really happy to get to do it for, you know, I think we did almost 9 months, but there were a lot of breaks, so.
Yeah, it was a
again
different type
understandable
of tour.
You didn't see it.
Well, we did see you in Jagged, and we are obsessed. It is, I mean, all Aaron Tveit aside, making, you know, him my talk of the season. Jagged Little Pill is my favorite show of this season that we got. It is just, we launched the podcast last year, and Antonio Cipriano was one of our first guests who helped us. And then we had Catherine Gallagher on in May, and just everyone we talked to, we just can't shower them with enough praise for bringing these stories to light. It is, Connor and I talked about how it's like, it feels like a modern day, like Hair meets Next to Normal with all of the topics, and oh, it's just so great.
I would even say Rent. I think that Rent was so groundbreaking because of all of the plot lines and topics that were shoehorned into it. And I know that Jagged Little Pill, people will say like, oh, there's so much in it. I would be at work and I'm like, I loved it. They'd be like, there were so many topics. And I'd be like, yeah, but like every day, everyone is dealing with all these topics anyway. Like, have you watched Rent? There are like every single issue, not issue, but like, or I suppose like political issue, socioeconomic status, sexuality, dealing with the healthcare system, homelessness, art, all of it. And I think that Jagged Little Pill is bringing also a specifically broad production that you're able to feel for all of these characters and see yourself or people you know on stage in such a beautiful way. I loved it.
Oh, yay. I love hearing, of course, when people like it. And yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, when I first read the script, I was like, oh my God, and that, you know, but I think just like, I think our creative team is so brilliant. Diablo Cody, it's just like the way that she took that album and like wove it together and made a story out of it that felt, you know, that doesn't feel trite or like just cheesy, which is easy to do, I think, when you're making a jukebox musical. Mm-hmm. I just, yeah, I bow down. And in some ways, it's like the songs just revealed themselves. You're like, what else could that be about? In some, you know, like,
yeah.
And it is, our world is full. There, you know, like in life, we don't get to just deal with one thing at a time. You know, if I were just dealing with pandemic, by now I'd be nailing it. But, you know, but, you know, instead it's just like 10 other problems in every day that you're just like, ah,
and absolutely.
That's the reality of our world. And I think, you know, one of the best things art can do is hold up that mirror and let us see ourselves and give us a place to just feel and process together. So I feel, yeah, so grateful to be a part of this show.
Oh, I love it.
I know. You've been a part of it from the beginning, right? Like the earliest readings. So how did it come into your life?
Yeah, it's so fun. I mean, it was like almost exactly 3 years ago, I was like doing a self-tape for it. So they were really ahead of their game, even in that.
I know, wow.
but I think because the creative team was very spread out, with just mm-hmm. like some people being on the West Coast, and our choreography is from Belgium. And
right.
So it was just, so they said, you know, everyone is submitting that a self-tape. And I had to do it quickly. I remember I happened to have the whole day free to work on it because I was going out of town to see my brother, and his wife were having a baby shower. And
fun.
So I just spent like the whole day, yeah, working on it, and then sent it in, and yeah, then found out that I got it. So that, you know, then it was like into the lab and all of that, which in some ways I think because I hadn't like auditioned in person, always feels like a continued audition. It feels like a really long audition when you're doing the first round of something. You're okay. Like, well, this is going to go okay. Or they're just going to be like, nah.
Right.
Because I mean, it's so common where you hear people getting replaced after labs, or, I mean, it happens to every actor, I'm sure, at some point in their career, but.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
So
I felt, you know, it was a really cool project, and I felt a great connection from the get-go. So I felt pretty excited about carrying on with it. So I was really glad that feeling was mutual.
Oh, amazing. And also another great female role, in role in general. I mean, seriously, she's the anchor of this. Mary Jane is the anchor of this story. And I guess I don't want to spoil anything that happens, but just continuously blown away by the amount of emotion and just, I mean, the acting you got to do in this show and singing. It was just unbelievable. I remember we saw it on a Friday night, and I was like, how is she going to do the rest of the weekend? And it was right after like New Year's too. So I don't even know what your guys' schedule was, but I was like, oh, I'm still like bloated from Christmas dinner. I don't know how they are going to power through the holidays here, but seriously, what a beast of a role.
Yeah, but fun, you know, and I mean, it feels weird to say that because she's experienced a lot of things that in real life are not fun, but mm-hmm. as an actor, it's nice to be challenged. And I think sometimes in musicals, like the scenes are just like skimpy because there's a lot of songs, yeah. You know, and so there's not as much to like sink your teeth into. Yeah. So it's just, it really does feel like the role of a lifetime for me so far.
Oh my goodness. I love that. But I mean, it's so good. I mean, first of all, I also love your costumes because they feel like they're comfortable.
I know. I was like, oh, I'm never going to be able to wear like character shoes in a show ever again. Like just this, you know, comfy mom athleisure look. Mm-hmm. Really, there's no going back.
I never.
Well, my favorite, I have to ask you about one of my favorite scenes. It took my breath away. Is smiling when I have to just talk about it with spoiling what happens. Is there sort of this reversal of the choreography midway through the piece where everything's moving in backwards? Can you describe the scene a little bit?
Yeah. So it's, you know, the scene that's leading up to it is, I'm like a mom, I'm going about town, I'm running some errands. And then I also like, I'm stopping at the pharmacy to refill a prescription for opioids, to which I am addicted. And then I can't get them. And you see me like buy them in an alley. And then it's like the second I take them, the song starts, and then you see the reverse of everything that you have just seen.
That's what it is.
And we rehearsed it a very, very, very long time because everyone is going backwards. So, you know, it's like people are moving huge props and set pieces. And so it's just so not only like the math of figuring out like, wait, what did we see and what will work? Like maybe what would be helpful for the audience to see so that they understand as quickly as possible, like, oh, this is a rewind.
Right.
So layering that in and then figuring out the reverse and then figuring out, I mean, and our show has incredible dancers. So like it wasn't hard for them. It was harder for someone like me to be like, wait, what? Show me how to do that backwards. But yeah, so it's just, it takes a lot of trust. And I remember the first time we did it in tech, you know, with a spotlight on, you're really blinded by like, you don't have the sight, like your peripheral vision. So all of a sudden I was like, wait, this is a whole new element that I wasn't prepared for, like walking backwards.
Yeah. It
takes a lot of trust.
Yeah. I feel like I remember someone pushing or pulling like a stroller at some point, and I'm like, oh no, are they going to crash? Like, it's crazy.
Right. Yeah. No, it was wild and miraculously very few accidents in the live performance. But, you know, and I think this was like the brainchild of Larbie, our choreographer, but I was doing a conversation the other day, and I was saying how, you know, so many things about this piece have deepened as we've continued to do it and share it with audiences. And we were doing a talk back with a group of people who are in recovery, and they were saying that this number particularly like spoke to them and reminded them a phrase that a lot of people are taught during recovery is like, play the tape back. So, you know, if you're thinking about using, and you know, you think, what's this going to look like tomorrow when I have to like replay this tape? And I was like, oh, wow, I love that that's, you know, that I don't even think was on people's minds when we were creating it. But that really resonated with me too and has stuck with me as I do it now.
Wow.
I am like falling to my knees. Like that is truly profound. And again, it's taking the mirror and showing theater, showing people their lived experiences in a, wow, in such a cathartic way, I think. Now, I have so many questions about Jagged Little Pill, but I think I just have one big one that I'm curious about is, what is your favorite part about Mary Jane?
Oh, I mean, I just love playing someone who is so flawed. Because like we all are, and we all spend so much time trying to pretend that we're not. And so in some ways it's just like, as an actress, it's like a relief to play someone who has moments of like just raw ugliness, you know, because you're like, oh yes, I know how to do that. I do that in my own life all the time. And because I think it's like the pressure, I mean, in some ways it's fun to play something that's so fantastical or glamorous or something, because like we don't usually get to be that in our real life. But, I think we also don't, you know, we don't let ourselves feel the depth of our pain every single moment of every single day, and just go to those kind of difficult places that, you know, hopefully you don't need to go to on a daily basis. But I don't know, there's something really freeing about playing a character that is exposing all of the, you know, the good and bad in her life.
Yeah. Wow, what a beautiful answer. Oh, I love that so much. I saw her when I, MJ, I saw her in so many moms that I know, and just the way that that MJ talks about her kids, or Connor worked at SoulCycle for a while, and seeing her at the SoulCycle class, I'm sure he recognized her coming through the door. You know, it's so realistic and beautiful. And the company of actors, I mean, every principal got nominated for a Tony, which is unheard of, but just so deserving and spectacular. Oh, how exciting.
I didn't know that it was every single principal. That's amazing.
Yeah, like every single person associated with our show that could have been nominated was. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said about this weird cut short Tony season. And of course, like a lot of shows, like we can't wait to see and celebrate when they are finally able to open. But I just, yeah, it feels like the most wonderful gift, to be celebrated with my entire company, who I just love and can't say enough good things about. Like, that there's no one that you have to be like, oh, you got overlooked, or yeah. Oh, I hate that. You know, it's just mm-hmm. It was really fun to just on that day be able to be like, oh my God. Wow. Yes. Everyone. Yay.
So where were you the day that the nominations came out? I mean, it was different. It wasn't 8 a.m. like it usually is. It was a nice noon announcement on a Thursday.
I know. Yes. So I've always imagined if I'm eligible, like, would I just like sleep in and try and, sleep through, or would I be like awake and just waiting nervously? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was actually on a hike and I didn't have cell service, which I kind of knew was going to be the case, but like, we had planned this hike weeks before they even said these announcements were going to happen. And I was like, well, I could not go, but if I go, it's just like postponing it a couple more hours. So, mm-hmm. Hey, what's a couple more hours? So yeah, it was like, as we were, getting back to service, like I was like checking my phone, like, what is it going to be? What is it going to be? Yes. So it's really, I had like a few different stages of the reaction. Like my first was just like, it wasn't like, oh my God, it was just, mm-hmm. It was like really deep. Like I just was kind of quiet and like trying not to cry. Like it just felt really, it was everything in this moment is so complex, but,
I know. Yes.
I do feel like grateful. This is like something I've of course dreamt of my whole life. So.
Oh yeah. And you're so deserving. I mean, that's so beautiful that you really, it affected you maybe differently than you might have realized with just that moment of sort of internal reckoning with everything. But I think it's so incredible that we're still able to have this good thing this year that, everything that could have gone wrong with everything getting pushed. And we were talking a little bit beforehand, just like the waiting game now, and we deserve as a community to have this celebration, because who knows when we'll be able to celebrate again. This might be the last Tonys until like 2022 or something along those lines. So I hate saying that out loud.
But yeah, but that's probably true. It's realistic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wait, so where were you hiking? I have to ask.
I was in Colorado. I've been there for, well, I'm not anymore, but mm-hmm. I was at the time. And I spent about 3 months there. There's a little theater called the Rocky Mountain Repertory Theater. And I worked there when I was in college. So a long time ago. And I've stayed friendly with the artistic director. And during the pandemic, I was just like, I would like a break from New York City, please. And, but as artists, like we don't really have the luxury of just, most of us don't have the luxury of being able to just like get an Airbnb somewhere for the mm-hmm. next however many months, so.
Which I've seen a lot of people doing that, and I'm wondering where the money comes from, but that's a whole other conversation.
Well, they might have a hookup, someone, or I think like a lot of people have, like, so for example, I reached out to this theater. I said, I know you can't have a season, so you don't have actors in your cast housing, but like, is anything else in your cast housing? And so it ended up being this wonderful kind of kismet moment where they invited a handful of other alumni to come out. And, so we were there and we were able to form a little pod with, a handful of other people and, just kind of have this little creative gang. So it was really sweet. And then, the nature is just like beautiful there and to have access to that. And during this time, especially, it felt like just a little slice of heaven,
Oh my goodness.
Sounds wonderful.
In real time, I'm remembering now, my boyfriend's roommate, who actually plays the guitar in our theme song, he was supposed to spend his summer, our theme song for the podcast, he was supposed to spend the summer at Rocky Mountain as Charlie in Kinky Boots.
And
he met your fiance there. Like over the last couple of months, I don't remember what the scenario was, but he like went out to visit or something uh-huh. like that. And he said he met your fiance. That's so funny. I'll have to tell him that we're talking to you.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh yeah. I know so many like plans that were supposed to be that then just,
because you were supposed to get married this year as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The wedding is still on eventually.
Yes, we're still deciding to marry each other. So good.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh. Who's the lucky someone?
Oh, he's the best. His name is Charlie Murphy. Not related to Eddie. though that would be cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
And yeah, we got set up by a woman who is sort of like a mutual friend. She had been, I did Crybaby, the musical, with her.
Yes, Connor loves Crybaby.
She was my understudy. So just, you know, word of the wise, always be nice to your understudy.
Yes.
You never know what they're going to, how they're going to hook you up later.
No, all about Eve situation or anything like that.
Yeah. Oh, how fun. And she set you guys up. Oh, I love it.
Is Charlie a civilian? Like, is he a performer or?
He is a performer also. Yeah. He was a theater major at Carnegie Mellon, and now he runs a company, with a really creative name called Music Theater College Auditions. And it be exactly what you expect. Yeah. It's like, it connects like high school students going through the college audition process with other artists, kind of people like myself, to be their coaches to help them through what is a crazy process.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What a great, you know, they say the best businesses come from people finding a need and then filling it. So I feel like what a great company, and also what a straightforward name. It'll be easy for people to find it, you know?
Oh, here he is in the background. We're just talking about you.
Hey, he's handsome.
He has headphones in, so he can't hear what's going on. But
yeah. Oh, that's so great. And so I could imagine things are happening currently, but all the auditions are probably online.
Yes.
So it's a whole new navigating this thing. Oh my goodness. Well, you have experience with, you know, getting cast after sending in a tape. So that's great.
Yes, it can happen. Really good things can happen.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so cool. Well, congrats about Jagged. I mean, I could ask you a million questions and keep you forever because it's just such a special show, but there's obviously other things we want to talk about as well. Wait, I did have one question before we move on.
Yeah,
did you base MJ off of anybody in particular, or was it sort of just an amalgamation of what was on the page and in your mind?
Great question. She really is a combo platter of, you know, so
love,
you know, so many people that I know and like prototypes of people that I witness, but then I'm like also parts of myself, you know, of course, like I really relate to the sort of perfectionism, and like working really hard and just being able to power through something. I'm from the Midwest, you know, I'm hardy. so I think like those parts of her are definitely, came from parts of me, but I tried hard not to base her off of anyone personally, because, you know, it was really tempting when creating a character like her to, you know, to not like her. You know, to be like, ugh, she's acting like that kind of person. And I just knew that I needed the audience to understand and care about her, because like I'm telling the story of an addict and of a survivor of sexual assault. And like those people should not be shunned or shamed. You know, it's like those are stories that we need to understand. Like why are they acting this way? It's because of this trauma that they've had, or because of this, you know, illness that they have. And that was way more important for me to like connect with than I mean, like Diablo's humor is so great. So like, I just wanted to let that be there and let it do its own work rather than like put a hat on the hat, I guess.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I mean, the show is funny too. Like, I mean, we're talking about these serious issues, but you have to laugh at certain things. And Diablo Cody, which most people would know her writing from Juno, which was that huge hit from when I was in middle school when that came out. I don't remember when that was, but so long ago. But just, is this her stage debut though? With oh my gosh. Well, the Tony's hers anyways.
And she's doing the Madonna film, working with Madonna. I heard that they were like quarantined together. Like Madonna had Diablo. I mean, this is like some pop culture gossip, I suppose, but I heard that Madonna had like, they were like quarantined together writing this out, which I think is going to be fantastic. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That seems like a match made in heaven. I mean, Diablo is like one of the kindest, nicest, most like humble people, but she's also like just one of the coolest people. I'm always like, you're just cool. You just are. You know?
I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So switching gears from Jagged for a second, we like to ask all of our guests about that moment when they realized they loved the arts, theater, pop culture. We call it a Ring of Keys moment because perhaps it was a moment of recognition. Do you feel like you had a Ring of Keys moment?
First of all, I love that that's what you call it. It's just like such a like brilliant homage, and I know exactly what you mean.
Oh my gosh.
Love it.
That's so nice.
I mean, there is not like a singular moment early on when I was just like, I'm an artist, but I did always really feel like I identified in that way. But I will say specific to music theater, it was like when I heard the cast album of Ragtime, I was like, I want to do that. Because I had been on the kind of classical music journey up until like midway through college. And that's when I was first exposed to that score. And like, I mean, that cast, in that, come on.
Legendary.
Legendary. Like, and I think like, you know, just all incredible actors, but all like incredible singers too. And so I think that I felt scared of musicals before, because I always thought like of them as being like song and dancey, which is naive. There were plenty of things before that, you know, but I don't know. It didn't click for me. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, I could work really hard and like try and do that, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I just love that
story. I love the idea that you always saw yourself, felt like an artist, because I think I felt that way too growing up. Like I was like, oh, I love creating things. And I suppose I am an artist. So whenever that vocabulary came into my life, I was like, yeah, I'm an artist too in my way, you know, that's really fun.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up before like the internet was like widely like what it is now. I mean, it existed, but it just wasn't like, you didn't spend time like Googling shit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Curse away.
And so I think like, I loved like just like checking out books or like movies that would be about an artist or something. Like I was just looking at the other day, I was looking at something, like a Klimt book in someone's house. Mm-hmm. And, I think it is this like very 90s, like strange movie called Dying Young with Julia Roberts and who is it? I feel like Scott Campbell Scott.
Okay.
And he is, and he, I think he's, I can't remember. I should watch again. I think he has a terminal illness, but he is like really obsessed with the artist Klimt. And I just remember being like obsessed with Klimt also.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, just things like that where I was like, oh, the arty life. Yeah.
Oh, we love Julia Roberts, so I'm shocked that hasn't come across our desks yet, but we'll have to look into it.
I could be misquoting it, but I think that's right.
It sounds right to me. The point transcends. That makes a lot of sense. That's so cool. I'm also suddenly thinking that I've never heard you sing Back to Before, and I'm sure you have in some concert or something, and I need you in a Ragtime revival.
I'm here for that. I did it at Barrington Stage.
Okay.
Few years ago, it was like right after, I think it was the summer right after the last presidential election.
Okay.
So it felt like a really powerful time to be doing it. I did just sing it for a Broadway for Biden event.
Oh, yes.
Not that long ago, and it's available on the interwebs. I'll send it your way.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you. That will help calm my anxieties. Dear listeners, we are recording this pre-election. We have to say it. That's why we aren't commenting on anything too deeply, because we're not there yet, but that's great. Oh my God. I'm dream casting the rest of the show too. We need to move on.
How okay, cool then, moving on.
That you were then in On the Town, which was at the Lyric, which is where Ragtime was, I believe, back in the late 90s. Yeah. That's so special. I wonder whose dressing room you were in.
Oh God, that's a great question.
You know, I love history stuff like that. That's, maybe it was Audra, maybe it was Marin, who knows?
I mean, I had to give anyone really.
Yeah.
But I know Audra did have my dressing room at the Broadhurst for Frankie and Johnny.
Oh, nice. Oh, love that.
And yeah, so I felt very like
you know. Oh, how fun.
Oh yeah, that was at the Broadhurst. Oh my God, I love that theater so much. That is such a, it's not a bad seat.
Yeah. It's like that perfect size, right? Mm-hmm. Like where there are enough people there that you're like, yeah, this is a thing. But you can still see the stage and yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. So On the Town, that was maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. We just talked to Jay Armstrong Johnson the other day, and he was just raving about you, of course. But just another dream cast of just incredible people, right place, right time. But from what he said, and I didn't realize this, is it was basically a summer stock show that ultimately went to Broadway. Exactly. I just figured it was the out of town, and then it was coming in no matter what.
No, I mean, I have a specific memory of like canoeing with Jay, like when we were doing it in the Berkshires, and both of us being like, oh my God, there's so much chatter. Like as if it was, this will transfer to Broadway, like calm down people. This isn't how it works. And we're both like positive people. Yeah. I just felt like it was, you know, an impossible scenario. So it really was very magical when it did get to, you know, come in.
Oh my gosh, we love that show. I mean, we actually watched, that's how we spent our 4th of July in quarantine. We watched On the Town, the original movie, and it was just like, this is what we need right
it's
now.
It's so, you know, good.
Yeah, just campy, fun, but also like so much, I mean, that Bernstein score is like no joke, and it's just also some moments that get your heartstrings, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Wait, what show did you make your Broadway debut in?
The 2006 revival of Company with Raoul.
Yes. Yes, right. Oh,
it's
my
April.
Gosh. I'll never forget seeing him on the Tony Awards that year. That was just insane. It's still a crime that he didn't win that year, but it is what it is, you know?
No, I mean, it's like how, it's so hard, like giving awards for art. It's really impossible to compare. Like,
it is.
His comedy, like, I think David Hyde Pierce is who beat him, who is a genius. Like, yeah. I would never, who would ever say, like, don't give him money? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, of course, you just want them both to win.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't seen enough ties over the years, but I did, that was the company where everyone played, played instruments, right?
We sure did.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, right. Okay, how many did you play in the show?
I played, I think, just three. Tuba, oboe, and saxophone.
Oh my God, you're like, oh, just three. That's amazing.
Because well, some people who are in those shows, you know, are really like incredible playing a bunch. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know, you're my oboe sister. I played oboe for like 6 years.
Work. Let's hear for the double reeds.
I know. And the embouchure, my oboe teacher would always be like, you're going to be a good kisser one day, Dylan. And I was like, that sounds a little odd, but okay. Closeted me. I'm like, yeah, kissing a girl.
Oh my God.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Oh, I cannot. That's so
I
funny.
Couldn't imagine picking up an oboe though, after all these years, because I don't think I'd have it.
No, sir. I did it then. And it wasn't like that many years after I had played it, you know, like, cause I stopped playing it really, I think like in college. I don't think I played it at all. So like when I graduated from high school, you know, but I played it again in the Susan Lurie Parks play Fucking A at the Signature.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That was like 2 years now, maybe 3 years ago. And I was like, oh no, this is the last time this will be happening. Like it was just, I was really bad. Like I was just inconsistent and like, I just couldn't,
The it's stamina it requires. I mean, I remember having to prepare like pieces for solo and ensemble in high school.
Sure.
I'm sure you remember. And even just like a 3-minute piece, my mouth would be, I could only practice once a night. Like it was like truly like exhaustion in your cheeks and lips. And I'd be like afterwards.
Oh my God. And when I hear people that play it, it's just like so beautifully, it's like really transcendent, but that ain't me.
Well, what a cool show to make your Broadway debut in. I mean, and that revival was so lauded. And that whole cast was amazing.
Yeah, it felt like a pinch me moment. You know, I think like I would have been glad to make my Broadway debut in anything, of course, you know. But I think like to be in an original cast is a really unique, special experience that like not many of us get to do. Like that, you know, there's a finite number of shows that come in every year. And and then to have it be a Sondheim show and one that, you know, people liked, just it was a dream. Like really, I felt like after that experience, like if I never do anything else again, like I'll be okay. Like that was a huge gift.
That's awesome. God, do you have a favorite Sondheim show?
Oh, that feels like a trick question.
I know.
it changes every year and as you get older. Mm-hmm.
It does. But I think like the first one that I fell in love with was Into the Woods. And so I think like that will just always have a special place in my heart.
Yeah. That's my favorite too.
What about you? Beautiful.
I would say Into the Woods. I was in it in high school. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, and our high school music director listens to the podcast, and that Into the Woods, we're all kind of like, oh, this is going to be so hard, you know, whatever. And I just fell in love with the show. And as Dylan kind of alluded to earlier, as I've gotten older, I've realized those lyrics have stayed with me in so many life situations, and it truly has every life lesson you could want smashed into it, you know, for how to be a parent, how to be a spouse, how to be a child of a parent. You know, it's really profound.
Oh my God. The number of times I say like excited and scared is
oh yeah. Excited and scared. Excited and scared.
But it's just, I mean, I feel that on a daily basis practically. Like, it's just, yeah.
2020 vibes.
Okay.
Yeah. Our director made me, Jack, and Connor Rapunzel's Prince because we were never on stage at the same time. It was one of those things. They would often find ways to do that, which was smart but tricky. And we never really got to share the stage, but that's okay.
Oh God, I never thought about that with like really
looking
alike.
Identical in high school.
Yeah, that would be hard for casting. Oh,
it was tough.
I know.
Wait, and then you also did Merrily We Roll Along.
Yes.
Oh my, talk about a loved show.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I remember like getting cast in that and talking to one of my friends who's in the business and him saying like, oh man, like everybody wants to be doing that one. Which I kind of was like, oh wow. I was naive about that. And I thought now after doing it, I'm like, oh yeah, dummy. Like it's just such a special, I think for artists, especially like we feel the pains of that, right? Like of, some people hold on to the art side and some people get success and sell out and some people get success and stay artists and some people just leave the business altogether. And I mean, it is so, I mean, like any industry is probably like that, but it feels especially poignant as an artist, I think.
Yeah.
Just all the different paths that people take and how the friendships grow and change. And yeah.
Oh, I can't listen to it without like getting emotional. There are times. Motif in general is just, and then the finale, how it comes back and it's, oh, the hope that you have. It's hard to hold on to that. And I know. it's something that we try and think about a lot. You know, we're coming up on a year, just about a year now of doing this podcast. And it's like,
thank you.
And we never want to be like jaded or over it, or it always has to be something that we need to remind ourselves that, you know, teenage us who would travel to New York from Cleveland every summer, it was our dream to even just see people like you or talk to you at the stage door. And now we're having these real conversations with people. It's really amazing. So thanks for helping that dream and keeping it all stay fresh, honestly.
God, thank you for making my dreams come true. It's like so fun to connect with other, you know, theater fans and fellow artists. And I'm so inspired that you guys do this together. Have you always been able to collaborate together in a, you know, harmonious way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being twins and also best friends means that, like, I think we have that family thing for us where we can fight and 5 seconds later we can be laughing about something and we just move on. We forget about it. We have such a strong bond, and thankfully it does transfer over to our working relationship, and we know what each other's strengths are, and we always want to help share the responsibilities and share the load. And I think that we're very, very lucky that we have each other to do this. I mean, especially Dylan, I don't know how I would do any of this without him. He's the driving force of drama. I'll say that much, but
he's wiping his tears away, everyone.
No, but for real, I think we're so lucky, because a lot of people will be like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know how I could spend that much time with someone else, but we have a good ebb and flow. We've always been able to work really well together. And it was also fun, you know, when we were doing the Hustle of New York, you know, like when I was interning, I was working at Soul Cycle, and Dylan was at 54 Below, and we had all these things going on at all times, and we would be riding the subway home at night from these shows we would see, and we would just be talking, and we'd be like, oh my God, this is so fun. I wish we could talk to, you know, Elizabeth Stanley about Jagged Little Pill. And then we were like, well, why don't we just
wait a minute,
figure out how to make this a creative outlet. And that was I mean, that wasn't the, like, the impetus of drama, but it was certainly one of those things where we were like, no, we, like, we do have, we have informed perspectives on things, or we like to think we do. And we also have such a love for the arts. So we're like, let's start something together. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Oh, it's so, it's really cool. It's inspiring.
Oh my God. Thank you.
You're so sweet, Elizabeth. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
So, calling it like I see it.
Sadly, we are wrapping up here, and we like to end on something we call a dose of drama, which could be that, you know, that piece of pop culture you've been consuming, something on your mind, maybe from this conversation or from real life, an interaction you had, a dream you thought of while you were on a walk. It could be anything. It could be if you're actually feeling dramatic today or if you're not. And Dylan, how about you kick it off today? I feel like I've been talking so much the last few seconds.
It's great. It's great. So this will feel like old news at this point, but I need to talk about the drama about this whole like battle of the Chrises that happened on social media. So someone put out like a tweet, and it was like, one Chris has got to go. And it was Chris Pratt, Chris Pine, Chris Evans, and Chris Hemsworth. And everybody in the world was like, bye-bye Chris Pratt, because it's no secret that he's part of like a church that's very anti-LGBTQ+. He's had some, you know, he hunts, which is, you know, to each their own.
Right. It's,
you know, he holds up a fish in a picture, which is always, you know, a sign of maybe Trumpian values or whatnot.
Oh my God, and stop.
So the world kind of came out and was like, Chris Pratt, no, no, no. And we all should have listened to Anna Faris years ago when they split. But anyways, so after that, everyone involved in the Marvel Universe and all these other male co-stars of his came out in his defense and were like, Chris is a good guy. And I think that first of all, it was just a joke online, and Chris is a funny person, and I think he could have made it humorous. But this is not an original thought, I saw the response was, when Brie Larson spoke out about certain things, she was immediately torn down, and she's part of the Marvel Universe, and nobody has stood up for her or had her back. And it's just the misogyny just in our industry and in film. It's so frustrating. And honestly, like, I'm not going to come to Chris Pratt's defense because of his views. And my favorite Chris is Chris Evans. So that's that. Do y'all have a favorite Chris of the four?
Chris Cross will make ya. I don't know. That's a hard, you know what? I'm not getting involved. Okay. I'm going to avoid the drama.
That. Avoid the drama.
Avoid the drama. I respect.
My favorite Chris is and has always been Chris Evans, because as a young closeted gay person, I loved him in Fantastic Four and Not Another Teen Movie. And he was so hot, and he was like vaguely naked in them, which was like, oh my God. I was like, oh my God, he's the man. This is the guy. But yeah, that's crazy. It is sad that they didn't come to Brie Larson's defense, because the things that she was speaking out about, pay inequality, women's rights, sexual assault in Hollywood, and none of them came to her defense on that. But they're going to talk about how people are saying Chris Pratt might vote for Trump, so we're going to defend him. That's a little backwards to me. That is drama. But anyway, my dose of drama is this. This is my first ever repeat dose of drama in over a year. This is wild, but it's also about a boy. It's, you know, I'm going to see about a boy. Wait,
what else is new?
Which rom-com is that where he's like, I'm going to see about a girl? Oh, is it Notting Hill?
No, it's Matt Damon.
It's Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting.
And Good Will Hunting.
Of course. Anyway, mine is about Chase Crawford from Gossip Girl fame, and he's now on this Amazon show called The Boys. And let me tell you, he has been in my life for 13 years, and I'm watching this Amazon show right now, and he has aged like a fine wine. And I looked him up, and he's actually just 35. I was like, he's been in my life forever. How is he still so young? And he looks better than ever. And I do recommend The Boys on Amazon Prime. It comes, you know, it's the conceit is that it's a superhero show, but it's actually kind of about, you know, being scrappy and going against like big business and corporations and sticking it to the man and tearing down the establishment and corporations. So, of course it has that like, you know, messaging in it, but he's really hot in it, and I can't believe how good he looks. So I guess it's not really drama, but I feel dramatic that I'm still obsessed after all this time.
Hey, I love that he's that young. I know, because whenever someone's like a star on like a teen romance, I'm like, they're probably like 30 playing 18. But he just had the benefit of actually looking good as a young person.
Totally.
I mean, not shocking considering how good it looks now, but yeah.
Elizabeth, do you feel like you have a dose of drama today?
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, I feel like a little bit of a poser because I haven't actually watched it yet, but I am like really loving all of the hype that Emily in Paris is getting because yes. Ashley Park, I just love her. I think she's such a like, just a glorious unicorn person. And years ago when I was playing Lucy in Jekyll and Hyde at Pittsburgh CLO, she was in the ensemble. Like she was a student who was like spending her summer there. And I remember that summer, like loving her. And it's just been so fun to kind of, you know, be a member of the Broadway community with her and then just like see her just bust out. And like the glamorous shots she's been posing with like all of her fashion looks, I'm loving them.
Love.
Yeah.
That's a great dose.
It is so good. You have to watch Emily in Paris.
Ooh, I can't wait.
It's like the best binge. The episodes are super quick and you'll be, it'll just keep playing them and you'll be in a Paris like time warp. It's so fun. Oh my gosh.
You'll start saying croissants as croissants. Like it's very that.
Oh, that feels wonderful. I like it.
Yeah.
Wee wee. Yeah. Oui,
oui. Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you for doing this with us. It is the sun has been setting and now my good lighting is gone, which you know it means the time flew by. So thank you for doing this with us, seriously.
Thank you for having me. It's just like so nice to connect with you through the screen.
I know. New friends in this pandemic is truly something rare to come by. Yeah. So we're thankful for you.
Likewise.
For real.
I look forward to seeing your faces, you know, really close up in, I don't know, sometime in the next year, maybe.
Absolutely.
Let's hope for it. Everyone should, of course, follow Elizabeth at el.stans. Yeah. Is that right? I don't have my little sheet in front of me on Instagram. Right. You stay away from Twitter, which I admire that of you.
It's too much for me. I know it's really where the action is at, but I guess I'm not that active.
It's a lot. My mental health suffers on the daily on Twitter, which is ironic considering I get a lot of my news from there, but it's wild. It's a wild place. It's the Wild West on Twitter, I'll tell you why.
It truly is. Truly. Well, I commend you for just, you know, riding that saddle.
Giddy up.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Congrats to you for everything exciting that's been coming your way. And I know that more is to come, truly.
Thank you.
All right. And of course, everyone should follow us at The Drama Podcast. Follow me at Dylan McDowell and Connor at Connor McDowell.
Yes.
And Connor, we will see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.